Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay and today I have in the studio with me Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. The format of the show is called Socratic Dialogue, and by that I mean it's a process whereby questions are put to another in order to come to an understanding of a truth, but not just a truth, a universal truth. The purpose of this show is to look at what Sister Denise calls conventional morality, to debunk certain myths we have on the subject, to re-look at things like our own conscience, our behavior, why we do the things that we do, why we say the things that we say, and why specifically, even though all of us have it within ourselves and make a decision to do the right thing in any given situation, why is it that we tend to act against our own conscience? And so we will also look at whether the current way of human functioning still works for us in today's day and age. Sister Denise, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. There's a very interesting topic that's on the agenda today called How Many of There Are You? How Many of There Is You? Are You? Is? Am? Okay. One does not know what word to use, simply because in previous programs you spoke about the conscience, then you spoke about self-talk, then you spoke about the mind, the intellect. What goes on actually inside of a person that there are so many layers of self?
It's very subtle and very deep, and people are very much interested in finding out what is my real identity. And I think that there are many inner compartments of the self. I think there's actually just one self, but we have a relationship with ourself, even though there's only one of us. It very often feels like there's three or four, or maybe 10 or 15, because we have many different poses, masks. The soul is an actor anyway, and so then you have a character that you act in this situation, and then you act a different character in another situation, and then there are characters within that interact with each other inside. So I think it's really very complex. So even though there is only one self, we still have to distinguish the characters that we play from the being that we are, and then continue playing different characters. And that doesn't mean it's not possible to have a relationship with our own self. We do.
So, Sister Denise, you mentioned in previous shows there was such a thing called the mind, then you referred to the intellect, then you referred to the Hindi word samskaras. Is all of this one person, different aspects of the self? You also mentioned self-talk. So, when one does that, who's talking to who? Who's the talker and who's the listener?
The mind is one of the faculties of the human soul. The intellect is another faculty. The samskaras are another faculty. And each faculty can be operating like a full person, even though they're not full people. And because of that, we can interact with ourselves. There may be, in your mind, you may have a desire that this is what I would like, this is what I want in order to feel good about myself. And the conscience will come along and say, well, if you do that, that may be very nice, but is that your dignity, is that suitable for who you are? So it's really like there's two different people. And part of the reason is because we internalize some of the external people who are in our lives. And so we may have, say, a person who's very influential and who has taught us in many ways about how to be, maybe our parents, and we will internalize that voice. That voice will operate as if it's an actual person who's on the inside, because I, the self, have internalized another person, and that person's voice has power within me and may even overpower the real self that I am. And then I may have an alter ego, another self, which is a substitute self that I've created. And why do people and how do people create substitute selves is what we call the false ego. So when a person is out of touch with the self, the spirit, the soul, you create an identity like I am a doctor, for example. And then you create this persona, this character of a doctor. You'll identify with that character, which is not a real person. But you'll fuse with that mask, that character, and think that you are that. But it's not real. So this is called false ego. And this is why you get all kinds of dramas inside between all these characters. And sometimes you find yourself saying, will the real me please stand up? And then there's all kinds of candidates for that too. Mm. They say, yeah, this is the real me. Now another one will say, no, I am the real me. You get lost.
Okay, so that what you just described sounds like a recipe for mental illness.
Well, it sometimes is.
It sometimes is, okay. So,
but not always.
Okay, so from what I'm hearing, there's a multitude of characters within each person. And so how does one go about managing the many faces of I?
Sometimes the soul is compared with a diamond, and there are some cuts of diamonds that have 56 facets. So you could look at yourself as, you know, inside a diamond. If you look at it in a microscope, you see there's a kind of a glow inside. And that, you could say, that's the self. And then all these facets are different performances that you can play, because the soul is also called an actor. And so I, the soul, am this tiny point of light which has this extraordinary capacity to project the self as this or that character, depending on the situation, depending on the relationship. We shift and change throughout the day. And what spirituality does, which I think is extremely helpful, is it enables you to say, okay, my actual real self is this point of light, this being, spirit, who is the actor, and I can act however I want and use whatever face I want. But always come back to this baseline that I am an essentially pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul. And then you see there are all these feelings that you have, different moods that you experience inside as a result of perception, as a result of thoughts. Moods are the inner reflection of outer circumstances, which shift. You know, a person's mood can even be changed by the weather. You know, like today is a rather moody, a hazy, cloudy day, so that will have an effect on the soul. And the soul can, if it's very affected by the weather, become moody, hazy, and cloudy on that day. So you can have people with sunny dispositions or dark and gloomy dispositions. And all of this is how the soul is affected by outside circumstances, and then in spirituality you try to build the self according to the virtues, the powers, the wisdom that comes from God, that goes on the inside of you, and that you can actually influence the outside. So you could say that body consciousness or materialist consciousness is where the outside makes you what you are, and then spiritual consciousness is where whatever you cultivate on the inside, you actually make the outside. And even that extends to, you can influence how other people feel about themselves.
Mm. How does feelings and emotions fit into your scenario? Are feelings and emotions one and the same thing? And how do they fit into your scenario?
They're in the mind. Feelings, emotions, moods, there's a whole spectrum of sensitivities, because the mind is like a sense organ. It's a very complex sense organ that can feel what is happening, whether something is pleasant, unpleasant. If somebody is feeling sad, you'll pick it up, and you know, there may be a discordant moment because you're picking up that people around you are not feeling all right. They're out of touch with their pure self. They are affected by something negative that is going on outside, or that they believe is going on. So beliefs can also change your feelings, and the way people behave in relationship to you can make you feel good or bad or suspicious, or you doubt, or you have faith, or you're easy, or you're not easy. All this whole thing is happening in the mind, and then it is an interface with the outside world, with your relationships with people, but there's a whole set of things all going on the inside, sometimes even between the different characters that you generally play.
Mm. How does one know whether you're effectively managing yourself? What are the signs? Is it necessarily the case if somebody is feeling good that all is well inside, or can that be a lie? Is sorrow the sign that you're not okay? What is the? How do you know that you're successful internally as opposed to externally?
To me, many, many emotions will arise. Sometimes they're described as waves. A wave of sorrow can arise within you, which may be triggered by some association, something you see that has nothing to do with the actual sorrow, but it triggers it. So this wave will come inside, and it is capable of taking over and causing you to lose control of yourself. Now, when you develop spiritual powers and spiritual purity, you get the ability to expand yourself to be able to contain any amount of waves of feelings, so that you can handle the pain of it or the distress of it without it actually taking over. And that, I think, would be a sign of success. When you aren't able to manage it and it takes you over, then I would think that you would feel not successful.
Okay. How does the human conscience fit into one's internal moral compass fit into your scenario?
There are two energies that you have to deal with. One of them is the energy of should, ought, must not. You know, you should not express the fact. I was looking yesterday at a film that was a report in the news, in which it's describing a woman who was being abused by her husband, and then when his parents came into the house, he told her, okay, you may not show on your face that anything has happened, because you have to show that everything is well, even though I just beat you up. You may not show that, you see. So this is a voice of a very important figure in this woman's life, her husband, and she has to pretend to his parents that he is behaving correctly on pain of various different threats, you see. And this is unfortunately an extraordinary commonplace situation. It was looking particularly at India that I think every 3 minutes a woman is badly abused by her husband, and there are more than 1 billion people here, so that's a, you know, very, very large numbers of people are getting abused, but being told by the moral code that you have to pretend everything looks good. So that's one energy that you're dealing with, and so you learn how to control your tears, how to hide your bruises and whatnot, so that everything looks good, you see, which is really very horrific and very tragic, but it's a very powerful energy in this culture. And then on the other hand, you would have another energy which says, what's going on is unacceptable, is deplorable, it's horrible. I do not think that I should have to pretend everything is not good. So when she spoke to her mother about this, her mother gave her another message, which is, you have to make your marriage work, because otherwise it doesn't look good in society. So whatever you have to do, you have to endure it, and so on and so forth. So these energies of the external moral authorities are actually causing so much suffering, and a person is feeling totally alone in the face of this, because everywhere the people who are supposed to be her protectors and the people who honor her and respect her are actually subjecting her to indignities on a continuing basis, and she has no recourse. So the energy inside of this is not right, how come I'm having to pretend everything is right when it isn't? So these energies clash, and then how does a person manage their feelings when they know that they shouldn't have to, except they're in a position where they do have to? This is highly, highly dysfunctional as a direct result of the prevailing moral ideals. And so this is why we're having to have these conversations, because what we're seeing is conventional morality is inhuman and it needs to be rethought.
True. Okay, in that scenario that you just described, what is the answer for the victim?
I think probably for these things to be talked about to such an extent that there is an energy built up which is equal to or greater than the energy of the morality that says it's not true, that denies it, that says, no, we've always been like this, you know, everybody has to handle a little bit of trouble in their marriage, this is why we give some salt in the marriage ceremony, you know, you have to expect it. But it has gone beyond acceptability, way beyond, for a very, very long time, and so talking about it publicly is, I think, a very important ingredient. And then there has to be support, you know. Mothers have to really think, why are you saying this to your daughters? What are you gaining from this? Why are you so concerned about looking good to people who, it doesn't matter if you look good to people who are causing that much damage to another human being? Why are you concerned about that?
Okay. We're talking about the inner self and how many of you are there, is M. And Sister Denise has just answered the question in an interesting manner. If you ask a three-year-old anywhere across the globe, where is your head, he'll point here. And you ask him, where is your heart, he'll point here. If I have to ask you the question, where would you point?
Same place.
Really?
Of course.
Where is the head? Where is the heart?
Well, the head is the head, but the thing is this. You associate your head with the rational part, and you associate your heart, which is a blood pump, with the feeling part. And this is because whatever is happening in your soul, within the mind, within your feelings, is going to have an immediate and powerful impact on your physical body, and the first place which is going to be affected is your heart.
Okay, so where is the real heart, not the blood pump?
The real heart, the core of the soul, that's inside this tiny point of light.
Okay, so the head and heart is here.
It's all there.
It's all there. Okay. And so now that we know that the head and heart is both part of the soul, how does one bring balance then between one's thoughts and one's feelings? Another way of putting it is, are you your thoughts? Are you your feelings? Is that the real you?
You, the soul, think. You, the soul, feel. If you start, you know, chopping up a dead body, you won't feel anything. You know, you feel through the body. And so if a person speaks insulting words to you, the soul hears those words through the ears, which mean something that have an effect on the feelings. You see, so one of the things that we do in meditation is to strengthen the inner self so that you develop a capacity for detachment. Because if somebody says something unkind, you have the right internally to disregard it. But if it gets past your intellect, which is a kind of filter, and hits you in the heart, then you're going to really hurt. So it's really about building up your capacity to protect yourself from sense perceptions which get through and cause damage.
And how do you do that?
Well, partly,
because I've yet to meet a person who's not sensitive. If somebody insults you, they insult you, and a human being anywhere on the planet will experience pain, emotional pain, if he is insulted, if she's insulted.
One of the ways is to have such a powerful inner voice that you can, what's known in Raj Yoga as, you can apply the power of transformation. So the words come in intending to hurt you as an insult. As they come in, your spirit alters it and receives it as a compliment. You can do that. And that is a skill.
To turn
an insult into a compliment. So that your sensitivity is intact. You're not going to make yourself insensitive. But your intellect is so fast and so powerful to turn the thing into something totally different, rather like magic. Mm. But you can do that.
Is somebody who's spiritually successful resilient?
Very resilient.
And what is your definition of resilience?
Well, I think this ability to transform hurtful, or things that are intended to be hurtful, into things that are complementary. You're really in your power when you can do that.
Is that not a lie? If somebody calls you...
Calls me a stupid idiot, I know perfectly well I'm not a stupid idiot, you know. So that person is completely mistaken, poor thing, you know.
And you'll change it into what?
Change it into Of course I'm perfectly fine. You have a problem. I don't have a problem. You have a problem.
Okay. But if the person fears that they're stupid, what happens then?
Then because they don't know themselves, because they are taking in indiscriminately everything that comes outside. This is the normal human condition. People are unable to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. And so spiritual practice enables a person to be very highly discriminating. And just, you know, there is something that everybody knows, do not give sorrow. This is normal part of conventional morality. But what spirituality adds to that is do not take sorrow. You're not obliged in any way to take things in the way they're intended. If they are designed to hurt you, thank you very much. You know, you really learn how to come into your power.
Mm. What does it mean when, what does it mean to really know yourself? Do you sit down with a pen and paper and write down all your strengths and weaknesses? Is that knowing yourself?
I think there are many exercises that people do in the process of finding themselves, and sitting down with a pencil and paper is quite fine. You know, you're looking at yourself all the time, monitoring yourself and seeing if you're doing anything which is against your own best interests.
Mm-hmm.
If you are having a thought which is negative, which is waste, you are actually damaging yourself. And so you grow into a person who will not inflict harm on the self, and definitely not allow anyone else to inflict harm on you. So that is called your self-honor, your self-respect.
Mm.
But because most people, for so long, for generation after generation after generation, have given away their power, have accepted that they are mere nothing, you know, and so spirituality says, don't do that. Don't damage yourself. Don't allow anyone to realize that you are valuable. Realize that you are a child of God. The soul is a child of God. I am a soul. And if any human being who is in false consciousness, anyone who insults me must be in false consciousness. So if they're in false consciousness, obviously they don't know what they're talking about.
Mm.
So why you take it? You don't take it.
Okay. Yes, Sister Denise, unfortunately I think that's all we have time for today. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you have found this talk to be quite informative. How many of you are there? It's not something that one normally thinks about, but I think we've all had the experience where you find yourself talking to yourself either with a kind or unkind voice during the course of a day. So I think a lot of what Sister Denise shared is something that you are able to identify with. I hope you can use the tools that she shared to your advantage, and I hope as a result of using these tools you can become a better person and improve the quality of your life. And I also like the aspect that Sister Denise shared of understanding that what we call the head and the heart is both within the soul, and one should learn to manage both one's thoughts and one's feelings. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, and I hope wherever you are, you will learn to find and make peace with the person that you are. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care and good day.